week's Sedra, the essence of our faith and the purpose of the Exodus from Egypt was for Midbar Sinai, to come to Har Sinai to receive the Torah. Actually, this week's Sedra is not a large chapter, but it has three chapters in it. It's the chapter Yudches, 18, 19, and 20. We'll concentrate on the chapter that speaks of Kabbalas HaTorah, the coming to the mountain. But before that is a brief synopsis of what's in chapter 18. It says there that Yisro, the father-in-law of Moshe, chapter 18, sentence 1, it says that Vayishma Yisro Kohen Midyon, Yisro, who was a priest of Midyon, was a spiritual person, he heard that everything that Asherosa Elakim, that Elakim did for Moshe, Kihotzi Hashem es Yisrael mimitzrayim, that he brought out the Jews, and the emphasis is in the Hashem. Elakim means a divine power, a God. But if you notice, the second phrase is Kihotzi Yud Ke Vov Ke es Yisrael mimitzrayim. And the phrase Hashem Yud Ke Vov Ke is always the God who is completely free from nature and has unlimited powers. So Yisro heard that at Yitzias Mitzrayim, like we said, Shmi Havaya, it became revealed and it became public and knowledgeable to all nations, if they'll only think about Yitzias Mitzrayim, that the revelation of God, the God of justice and the God that intervened on behalf of his people. Now, it doesn't mean that everybody will see it. It says you have to hear it. There were some that didn't hear it, Amalek. Amalek did not receive it as Yisro did, but Yisro understood the meaning.
At this point, Yisro realized, Yetzi Hashem, that it's God who is, as verse says, free, uncontrolled, and has unlimited powers over the world and its contents, and that he shapes the future of the world. So Yisrael, in this context, you can see the type of an individual he is if you compare him to Amalek. Amalek wasn't interested in the philosophy of theology of reality, just the power of evil, to go against anything he could. But Yisrael had an entire different picture. Now Yisrael, according to Midrashim, was one who Pharaoh would ask constantly. In fact, when it said, Hotman is Chachmalo, Pharaoh originally counseled, foreign counsel, how to deal with the Jewish problem. One of the people that he asked was Yisro. And here we see a metamorphosis. We see a total change taking place in Yisro, that Yisro came to his realization in seeing that indeed there is a God. Now, it says, what did he emphasize? In sentence 11, he says, Atoya Dati, now I know, Gadol Hashem, Nikola Elohim. And here again you see the terms used. That Yudke Vodke is greater than all the other gods. Kipa Dogor Asher Zodu Alehem, or I recognize him, Badogor, in that aspect Asher Zodu Alehem, which they saw through. It wasn't just a perchance, but it was a thought out response unto Egypt, which shows a God who is totally in control. There are Elohims, there are a lot of divine forces. But this Hashem is the absolute force. Now, why? Because we did discuss, I believe, 2 weeks ago, that the three ideas that the Egyptians presented in their behavior towards the Jewish people, so they were punished accordingly. For example, we said that there was the idea of Abdus, Gerus, first they were like strangers, then they had Abdus, they enslaved them, then Inui, they afflicted and persecuted them. So now Yisro, and he said that the Makos were, if you notice that the Makos were accordingly. The Tzach, Dam, Tzvardeya, Kinin. He said like the Dam means that the Egyptians who took pride in the Nile, that this is their natural habitat. You see that God has control over that, and he can destroy that, where they'll also only be by the strangers. It's about they are the meek little frog. lorded over the Egyptians. And then Kinim was the affliction. So Israel was wise enough to comprehend this. And that's the emphasis here on the pasuk. Ki ba'dovor asher zodu aleihem. That in this thing with which zodu, he sinned, they did evil to the Jewish people, in the same fashion God gave them their punishment. So again, so you see that Israel was a person who was what you would call a theologian. And if he didn't have a love for the Jews, obviously he didn't have the innate hatred that Amalek had. And he was a person who say was passive at that point, and he was influenced by this revelation of God. Now, the Ramban discusses when did this take place? When did Yisrael hear about this? Because the Torah says that he came, you notice back in sentence 5, Yisrael brought Moshe's wife and Moshe's children, Moshe b'bonav v'ishto el Moshe. It says, Elamibor asher chanesh shom har alakim. Now if you literally interpret it, it would mean that he brought him to the wilderness where Moshe was in camp. And that was the mountain Har Elohim, meaning it was the mountain of God. So it would be the Sinai that would be the obvious thing. So that would be this point. So it would seem that Israel came after Mountain Torah, after the Torah was given. But if that would be it, so why wouldn't Moshe tell him anything about Mountain Torah? It says a little bit later, by Shafir in sentence 8, it says by Shafir Moshe, the folks know that Moshe told his father-in-law everything that God had done for Pharaoh and Mitzrayim. So how could it possibly be that we shouldn't mention the revelation that occurred? So that's one of the main points that the Ramban presents to argue that this took place before Matan Torah, as it's actually written in the text, that it seen if you follow the text, this took place in chapter 18, before the events of chapter 20. But what troubles them is that if it took place before, what is the meaning of sentence 5, where it says that they went to the mountain Har Elohim? So it seems that they were on Sinai, and that would seem to imply they were already there. So therefore the Ramban gives an alternative interpretation. And Hirsch brings this down also, meaning that really Midian was closer to Har Sinai, because it said that Moshe, when he was in the previous chapter, in the early chapters of Shmos, it says that Moshe was tending the sheep of his father-in-law, Yisroel. Then he came to a certain place where the burning bush appeared to him, and that was really Har Sinai, but it said at that time, when you take out the children of Israel, Ta'avunas of the king will serve God, Alahorazem, this mountain. So that really was Har Sinai. So the Midian was in proximity to Har Sinai. Har Sinai was in proximity to Midian. So if he was going to greet Moshe, towards Moshe, he would first come to Har Sinai before Rephidim. Rephidim was a little bit further than Har Sinai. So that's what the Ramban said, that Yisrael knew that the Jewish people were destined to go to Har Sinai, because soon the Torah says that Moshe shared this with him. So therefore he went to Har Sinai hoping to find them there, but they were still at Rephidim. So he sent a messenger to Moshe that he should tell him that Yisrael is there. That's the way they answer, in order that there shouldn't be this contradiction. That means that if Yisrael came before the Torah was given, then why does it say Har Elohim? But then the Ramban says that perhaps he came there, and the events that happened with the Torah go without saying that Moshe told him. He didn't have to relate that again. But this takes place, there's a long discussion among them as to exactly where this takes place. Hirsch also points out the delicacy of the language here. He says in sentence 3, when he speaks of Moshe's children, he says, Ve'eis Shnei Boneho, and her two sons. In sentence 6, it also says, Ishtecho, your wife, Ushnei Boneho, and her two sons. But in sentence 5, it says, Uvonov, Vayavon Yisrael, Jose Moshe Uponov and his sons, the Ishto and his wife. It doesn't say and her sons, but all of a sudden in the middle it changes to Moshe's sons. So Hirsch says that in sentence four, I mean in sentence three and six, Yisro is like doing the act of speaking to Moshe. So he wants to emphasize he's not coming to burden Moshe with his family. Moshe obviously left the family there when he was involved in his work in getting the Jewish people out. So now they're still in the midst of this work. So he like says, Shnei Vanel, it's her sons, you shouldn't feel any obligation that we're dropping the family in your lap. Whereas he says in sentence five, just telling us the narrative, is telling us what occurred. Not Yisro speaking, not Yisro doing, but just what happened. So there it calls it in the proper form that it is Moshe's sons, that he brought Moshe's sons. But when it speaks from Yisro's view, either who Yisro brought and what he said, there he uses the expression Shnei Vonecho, her sons, that Moshe shouldn't feel any obligation, but he still considered it as her sons and he would take care of them until the proper time comes about.
The one contribution that Yisro made, and in fact they emphasize that the name Yisro, Yeser, was a name of his because a chapter of the Torah was added because of him. The idea of judges, which obviously would have been occurring at a later time anyway, that the whole law of appointment of justices would have been revealed to Moshe, but it came about a little bit earlier on the initiative of Yisro. It says it wasn't the next morning. We learned the next morning after Yisro came, and Moshe sat down to judge the people, and the people were standing outside the entire day. So 14 says that Hosein Moshe saw what he was doing to the people, and he said, that which you're doing is not proper because everybody is standing the entire day. So Moshe said to him, the people come Lidrosh Elikim, to inquire of God. Now, if this was after the Torah, it means they came with questions that just came up. Entire introduction of a judicial system of Torah and mitzvahs, so there's no question that they would come to the source. Even if it would come before Torah, so what is the idea of judging, inquiring of God? And then you say in sentence 16, he says, if there will be a contentious matter amongst them, they would come to me that I would judge between one and another, and I have to make the laws of God and his teachings known. Again, if it's the Torah, then we understand. But if it's not the Torah, if it was before the Torah, so what is the laws of God and the teachings known? So Hirsch mentions, even before the law giving in Sinai, they already had the laws, the Noahite laws, which all of mankind was supposed to observe, the laws of Milah, the laws of the Sabbath. Now the question is, though, we could ask, fine, so we'll say it's before the Torah, and they're coming to ask Moshe for these laws. So why was it, it seems, Vayimi Mochras, it was the next day, this was something unique. Moshe had been with them since they came out of Egypt. What did they do in Egypt? I mean, Vayimi Mochras would seem to imply it was something new, that Moshe sat down to judge the people. When they came to Har Sinai, how does it say in the previous sentences, they came to Har Elikim, they were getting in the proximity of Har Sinai, then it seems that Moshe said the people come to inquire of God. What inquiry it is? What happened before? So I would seem to say that Lidrosh Elikim means in this idea of searching is a person who searches for the proper path to fulfill his mission. A person who searches to find within himself or to find the means of being able to fulfill his purpose in life. Now, when the people were slaves, we'll say, or when they just went out of Egypt a few days before, a few weeks before, so they were still not concentrating on spiritual matters. We know there was a contention with the Mon and with so on, they weren't concentrating on spiritual matters. But here they were getting already closer to Har Sinai. It says that they came to the Har Hashem. They were already getting closer to Har Sinai. And therefore, they began already to concentrate on spiritual matters. If they want to concentrate on spiritual matters, they then came to Moshe, each person to Moshe in mass. You could just picture it, because each person wanted to introduce something or to inquire. He wasn't, there was no revelation yet. There were no mitzvahs that were taught to them, and yet they felt this spiritual thirst to be a Dorshe Hashem. So they knew Moshe was the spiritual force, so they all would come to Moshe to be Dorshe Hashem. And this would bring everybody there, because otherwise, how do all the people come? It says, if you notice, Vayamed ho'om al Moshe min ha'beka ad'erev. It seems that there was an outpour of people all of a sudden coming to Moshe, because their spiritual atmosphere was changing. It's fun. A little bit later, we see it was changing, because as soon as they came to Har Sinai, they already, it said, had some impact upon them, because the emphasis, if you look for a moment in chapter 19, where it says, "Bechodesh Ashlishi Letzeis Bnei Yisrael Me'eretz Mitzrayim," in the third month, on the day that they, when they left Egypt, they came to Midbar Sinai. And it says in sentence 2, "Vayachanu," they rested there by Midbar, "Vayichan Shom Yisrael Neged Or." And the Jewish people dwelt there opposite the mountain. So it says the expression, "Vayachanu Bamidbar, Vayichan Shom Yisrael." Vayachanu is plural, Vayichan Shom Yisrael was singular. So we know the quote that Rashi brings, that there was Ahavas Yisrael. Kulam Belev Echad. What is Belev Echad? That everybody was in unity. Now, up to then, we know there was a lot of bickering and there was a lot of contention. But here, there was a change that took place. And the emphasis of the change is V'yachanu Bamidbar. They dwelt there. Because all the commentaries ask, we may refer to it a little later, at the dual expression. Why does it say twice, V'yachanu and V'yichan? So the idea is V'yachanu, they dwelt there. They stood near the mountain. And that brought about a metamorphosis, a transformation amongst them. They were transformed into one person. So you see that the being within the area of the Hor, before any revelation itself, brought a difference in the whole spirit of the people. And as they were going from Rephidim, he gave them some laws, and they were able, what happened from Rephidim, if we say that the previous chapter of Yisro was in Rephidim as they were going towards Har Sinai. We know in Rephidim they had another revelation of God. They were receiving one revelation after another. They had the water that came there. So the people were beginning to experience already this change. It concluded with Har Sinai. That's why we say Ilu Kervonu Lifnei Har Sinai in the Mahagore, we say Ilu Kirvonu Lifnei Har Sinai V'le Nosan Lonu Es HaTorah Dayenu. Now, it's, what does it mean? I mean, a lot of people would agree with that, that they would be agreeable, that if we didn't get the Torah, they would be happy. But we're speaking in a spiritual sense. So in a spiritual sense, it says, if we came to Har Sinai and you didn't give us the Torah, Dayenu would be suffice to thank you for that, because it would have still accomplished something, because there it brought about the whole Vayichan Sham Yisrael, the unity of Israel, which is a result of spiritual act. There is no unity of Israel, there's no significance if it's not based on Ruchnias. I mean, we feel it because we're traditional people. So we feel the closeness of Klal Yisrael, the Hisarvus of Klal Yisrael. Other people couldn't care less, we know. You could have an Israeli mafia, they wouldn't care less one for another. And we see that even in the public scene now. Why? Because this unique Achdus of Klal Yisrael that came about is also part of the impact of Sinai. You have to accept Sinai. If you accept Sinai, you accept the Torah. You also accept the entire experience of the Torah. And the experience of Har Sinai was the Vayichan Shom Yisrael. But if you're a Jew in birth even, and you deny a nationality, but you deny the Sinai experience, so you're not only denying the mitzvahs of the Torah, which you won't fulfill, you're also denying the Sachdus, the Sarvus, you're denying the unity, the oneness, and the Kol Yisrael Arevim Zebizeh, because that was a result of the spiritual change that took place in Kabbalah Satorah. All of that is emphasized in Vayichan Shom Yisrael. Therefore, it goes together. Both aspects of it go together. The pleading for a fellow Jew really goes together in Kabbalah Satera of Har Sinai. And the further a person is alienated from the Har Sinai, from the revelation, that also has to do with the Vayichan. So Yisro saw all of this, and you would think, as a father-in-law, his concern was primarily for Moshe. That Moshe, you're going to run yourself ragged. How could you do all of this? Because Moshe had a triple function. It says in sentence 16, back to 18:16, Ki yilem dovor, when they have any matter, they come to me and I have to judge, right? And it says, and I have to judge and I also make them knowledgeable of the laws. So what he was doing was serving as an advisor, Ki yilem dovor boilai. They want advice, they go to the Rebbe for advice. In addition to that, he was the Dayan, he had the Paskin. That means they had Shilas, they had Dinei Torah, Vishafati, I judge, between one man and the second. In addition to that, he had to be the teacher. Vehodati, as Kluke Elikim Vesteros, if a person has to occupy three full-time positions, it's very difficult, especially when you're dealing with millions of people. So Yisrael saw all of this, but it's interesting, his concern was not primarily for Moshe. He, although we find later, he tells him in sentence 18, Novol Tibo Gama To Gama Omazeh, you're going to wear away, you and also the people. Ki Kovid Mimcho Adovor, this alone is too heavy for you. Leisuchal Asor Levadecho, you're not able to carry it out. Now, usually that would be from a solicitor's father-in-law. He would speak to what? To his son-in-law and say, look, it's just too much. It's impossible for one person to do all of this. But we see that the primary concern of Yisro was not the Ator that he mentions here, but when you look back at sentence 14, he seems to, the main impact, the impression upon him, was Asher Hu Oseh La'om, what he is doing to the people, meaning that it's not proper for the people to go ahead and to be standing there. He also had these feelings for Moshe, that novel Tibol, but the major idea was really the arm that disturbed him. So he gave Moshe the idea of setting judge, which was a very good system. It turned out, though, that if you go with the order here, the actual number of judges that you ended up with, last year I remember going through the count, I'm not going to go through it again, but the actual number of judges that were a tiered judiciary system was 78,600 judges. So that's quite a few judges, especially when you have to pay them pensions. It didn't have to at that time. But there were superior judges and lower court judges. It was level after level. So now it was organized very nice, the fact that you could go ahead with such a judicial system. So Hirsch just makes an observation here on sentence 24 when it says, Vayishma Moshe lekol chosno, that Moshe heard the voice of his father-in-law and he did everything that the father-in-law said. So it says here that nothing is instructive as this information regarding the first legal institution of the Jewish state that came before the Kabbalah Satorah. What is the purpose? So Hirsch emphasizes, so little was Moses in himself a legislative genius. He had so little talent for organizing that he had to learn the very first elements of state organization from his father-in-law. So it said, the man who tired himself out to utter exhaustion and to whom of himself did not occur to arrange a simpler solution which would be beneficial to the people and to him, the man who deemed it was necessary to have Yisro to give him this obvious solution, he could have never given the people the constitution and the laws out of his own head. That man was only, as we've emphasized the last few weeks, and just because of this, the best and most faithful instrument of God. He was just an instrument of God. He wasn't the great codifier. You know, again, some of the people who say, well, they admit there was a Moses, they admit there was a law, but Moses himself gave out this code. So he says in organization, and especially in something like the complex of Torah, complexities and the way it's organized, that would seem to be incongruous to the nature, we'll say, or the abilities of Moshe, Moshe's nature. It could be the abilities would be there. But he was so involved in doing everything and dedicated, just like a servant to God. It wasn't Moshe. So we see that the Torah, this is another idea that emphasizes the idea of revelation. Now, there's one interesting observation here. As I said, this is just a synopsis on this. At this point, Yisro tells him, when you will appoint appointees. So it says, Kol HaDover in sentence 22. If you'll notice, in chapter 18, sentence 22, he tells him how to define the work, which work would be to bring to you. So he says, Kol HaDover HaKosher. He says you should seek men of stature, men who you know who you could depend on. And HaDover HaGadol Yoelecha, if it's a big thing, they will bring to you. And Dover HaKaton, if it's a small thing, Yishbetuhein, they'll be able to judge. Now, if you notice sentence 26, it says that Moshe chose people, as Yisro told him to do, and what he told them was, HaDover HaKosher Yivin El Moshe, the difficult matter you should bring to Moshe, and Dover HaKaton Yishbetuhein. So, and a small matter, they themselves will judge. Why does Yisro, the commentaries note, why does Yisro in sentence 22 emphasize or describe Dover Gadol and Dover Katon? A large item and a small item. And in that means like a large claims court and a small claims court. And in sentence 26, when Moshe speaks, he speaks of HaDover HaKosher, the difficulty, and Dover HaKaton, the small matter. There's a significant difference in language. Dover kosher, dover gadol. Dover kosher means difficulty. It means two people could have a question to whom this half dollar belongs to. Now, that half a dollar is a dover kotor, right? The halacha to determine this half dollar may be a very complex and difficult shaila. So you don't say, well, since it's only a half dollar, we won't even bother looking into the law. You go ahead and split it and disperse justice that way between a dover gadol and a Dover Katan. So he told him, no, there is no such thing as a Dover Gadol. Even a penny is a Dover Gadol in true justice. The justice that you have any problems about, the Dover Kosher, that which is difficult for you, that you bring to me. The Dover Katan, which is small, meaning you know the answer, they will judge it. But the determination will not be if it's a matter of $5 million or it's a matter of $5, but rather the complexity of the halacha, because a dollar is the same, or a penny is the same as a dollar. There is no difference in the value when you're speaking about justice. So this Moshe changed a little bit, which Moshe was able to appreciate, obviously, more than Yisro. For Yisro, although he was a great person and so on, he still was far from Moshe. In fact, from here in the nature of Yisro is the famous quote, Vayichad Yisro. There's the expression, when Yisro heard about the story of Egypt and everything that happened, so what does it say there? Vayichad Yisro. You've heard that expression in sentence 9. Now the word Vayichad means Yisro, the way Hirsch interprets it, in sentence 9, that Yisro rejoiced over all the goodness which God had done to Israel. Because the word Yichad is also an expression of joy. Hirsch notes the difference from simcha to chida, that simcha means inner joy, inner feelings, vayichad means outer feelings. But it says he rejoiced. But we also know that the Gemara says, they learn out to the contrary from vayichad Yisro, that naseh psoro chidudin chidudin, that he was shivering and trembling. He felt extremely bad for what happened to the Egyptians. And therefore, we learn out from here that a ger, a convert, at asor adore until 10 generations, le sivaze amoye. You shouldn't go ahead and speak disparagingly of his background. Because although he is totally converted, we'll say, and we're speaking about a true convert, yet he still has sensitivities, he still has sentiments and emotions. So the word chid, vayichad, meaning chidudin, chidudin, like cuts. It was like cuts in his skin, it bothered him. So normally it's interpreted as being two contradictory interpretations, meaning one interpretation is Vayichad, he rejoiced, and the other interpretation of Vayichad means that it was disturbing to him. Yet you don't have to say that these two opinions differ necessarily, because you could have two emotions and two sentiments which are totally contradictory to each other and incongruous with each other, yet both of them take place by a person. I mean, sometimes you feel joy and remorse, and a lot of times you have certain feelings and you're ashamed of the feelings, so you necessarily cover them up. But actually, that isn't exactly the right way to do it, but it's to take the feeling and direct it and sanctify it. Now, you have a extreme example, but there's a halacha that way, and you could appreciate the concept. The halacha is that if a father dies and leaves you over a large sum of money, so what bracha do you make? So of course, when one dies, you make the bracha Boruch Dayan Emes. But the din is that he makes two brachas, Boruch Dayan Emes and Shechiyonu. Now what's the Shechiyonu? A terrible thing to do. Shechiyonu, that he just became a multi-millionaire, inherited all the money from his father. Now you'll say, isn't that a terrible thing to do? Let's get it out of my mind. But was it in your mind? I mean, you're ashamed to even tell yourself sometimes that it was in your mind. But you would be more than human if it wouldn't have passed through your mind. The Torah doesn't demand more than a human being can experience. In fact, later, Hirsch makes the note, he just underlines it, and there's a lot of meaning to that. You know, when we're going to speak pretty soon, when God brings him to Sinai, it says, Eilat Vohem, I want you to be a holy nation, a kingdom of priests. This is what I ask of you. And the Chazal say, not more and not less. What is the idea of not more? I don't ask of you to be angels. I ask of you to be a holy people, meaning that even if you have all of these weaknesses and frailties, which are part of the human experience, of experience being a human being, I want you to hallow that, right? To sanctify that. So instead of pretending that that emotion is not there, if you make a bracha, what are you doing? You're looking at it from a different aspect.